So this morning we are asking you, the public, a very big question. What are you personally prepared to do to make a better health service? So are you willing to pay more, and are you perhaps prepared to make some big changes to your way of life and accept responsibility for looking after your own health? Now, it might seem obvious, but I think at this point we have to ask ourselves these questions. The NHS is 70 years old this year, and by all accounts it is often creaking at the seams. Not a week seems to go by without another crisis, and the costs are forever rising. 03030 80 55 55. It's so important that we talk about our health service and how we approach it and how we perceive it, because we get stuck in our ways quite often, and sometimes we need to stop and take count. For example, the NHS here eats up half of the Stormont budget. So if that increases, it has to come from somewhere else. So do we want that to come from, for example, education, infrastructure, or any other department, with all the negative impact that would, of course, have in those areas? Or are we, every single one of us, prepared to pay more to make the NHS fit, not just for now, but for the future? We're all living longer, so what are we going to do about it? Or could we, by changing how we live, actually save the NHS a complete fortune? Let's hear just a small selection of clips on attitudes to the NHS. And I should add, before you hear this, of course, we're not suggesting that any of these people bear a responsibility for their situations.
I think we're crumbling because we're constantly going from cycle to cycle, trying to implement quick fixes.
There's two things that we can't get away from. One is the ageing population, and the other one is the advances in medical care. Both of those are symptoms of our success over the years. But the politicians and the people have to be honest with themselves and say more resources need to be put into the NHS.
It's too big, it's too cumbersome, and it stumbles from one crisis to another. It's so mismanaged from the outset. It's never going to be able to work.
So I don't just feel I'm disappointed because they cancelled my operation. I'm disappointed because I have waited 2 years for my operation, and the fact that they can't give you another date. I feel my life is on hold at the minute. I'm just in limbo. I'm in pain all the time.
My father was admitted and treated, and he had to stay in the A&E department for 17 hours until he got a bed in the ward.
Of course there are problems with waiting lists. Of course there are problems, and the finances have to be sorted out. But it's a fantastic organisation when you really need it.
So what do you think? Are you willing to pay more? Change how you live and how you approach and perceive the NHS, what it's there for, how you can rely on it? Or maybe you think we should actually take the cash to try and help the situation from elsewhere. 03030 80 55 55. With us this morning is the former health and social care boss, John Compton. Good morning to you, John.
Morning, Vinny.
Also here we have Professor Deirdre Heenan from the Ulster University's Health and Wellbeing Research Centre. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Vinny.
What do you think, John? Because people, we often think, well, we pay our taxes, therefore the NHS is meant to be there to do what it was designed to do 70 years ago.
Well, I think that is the case. I mean, the first thing to say is the NHS is a fantastic institution. I mean, it's second to none. It's the envy of the world. If you look at, and I had the privilege of looking at lots of systems across the world, and there's nowhere really quite like the NHS for the delivery of care and treatment. And it's getting better. We have more better trained staff working in the NHS, and we have better treatments available. But I think we all do have to just pause and ask ourselves a sensible question. What do we do to help make the NHS successful?
Yeah, you make it sound very rosy in the garden, though, John. Like, would you agree that the NHS is on its knees? It is struggling for money?
I'm never a fan of emotional language. It will always struggle for money. It will always struggle for money. That's the nature of the beast, really. It's such a large thing. But I think the important issue for us all as citizens, as users of it, is to understand what's our contribution to this. You know, it's easy to sort of turn around and say it's badly managed, the politicians don't know what they're doing, the doctors are wrong, or all of that sort of stuff. But there is a real fundamental question for us all. Are we prepared, for example, to examine our own responsibility in terms of our lifestyle? Because, I mean, lots of lifestyle issues create problems in the health service.
Yeah.
Are we prepared to realistically pay for the health service. There is a collusion, isn't there, between a lot of members of the public and the politicians not to raise taxes, for example, in terms of health service provision. And I believe that if you don't actually have a serious, honest debate about that, we'll always be sitting here talking about this crisis or that crisis.
Let's step through the different options that there are. For example, our lifestyle and how we behave. We all know that if you eat lots of fat, lots of sugary foods, you're going to put on weight. Info from 2014 saying that it costs Northern Ireland $370 million a year to try and deal with obesity. But we know what makes us fat. We also know that smoking is bad for us, yet 20% of adults in Northern Ireland, as of last year, are smokers. We all go out, we get sunburn. We know the damage the sun can do. A lot of us drink more than we should do. And I don't just mean people that have issues with alcohol.
No.
So we know it, but we just, I think, in the back of our head think, well, do you know what? The NHS, it's still there and it's there for us to rely on when we need it, but it's struggling to cope with that.
Well, I think there's a real issue here. You know, there's no point in what I call the finger pointing exercise. So let's point a finger at people and tell them, you should do this, you should do that, you should do something else. That never works. It's asking the question about, tell me about your life. What makes your life work? What would make your life work better for you? And enabling people to do things. It isn't, you know, I like, for example, if you look at the recent advertisement from Public Health Agency about small steps. That's really the issue. It's not about a big dramatic change here. And it is a very granular, grinding thing. You know, everybody who's ever tried to lose weight will tell you how difficult it is.
Yeah.
Right, it really is difficult. So there is no point in pointing a finger at people, but we do have to have, I think, a more serious debate about those issues, because prevention is always better than cure.
Deirdre?
Well, I mean, I absolutely agree with what John has said. First of all, I do think it's important that we celebrate the NHS. It's 70 years old and it has been a massive achievement, health care-free at the point of delivery. Yeah. So it is important to say that. It's also important to say that when the NHS was set up, people could expect to live to 65. It's now 85 plus, and that is important. And we really haven't changed how we deliver the service. At least it hasn't been fundamentally changed. And I think that's important. We have to consider that we have an ageing population. And let me say at the outset, that is a cause for celebration. Of course, we all want to live
but
longer.
I think you've just really nailed it there. One of the key issues is that we are now living so much longer than we were when this was designed, and that's a global challenge. That's not just here. And then when you look at who pay into the tax system to try and pay for the NHS, you know, that generally tends to stop when you get to your pension age. To an extent, you're not working as long, so you have this imbalance, whereas people are living longer but they are not paying more tax to try and counter that.
Well, that's one issue, and I suppose it is the juxtaposition that we're living longer and indeed we want to retire earlier. More and more people are talking about retirement at 50.
I'd like
70.
To retire at 50, no problem.
But I think there is a bigger issue about what we do with the money we have. The health service is an avaricious user of resources. I believe it wouldn't matter how much money we'd have for the NHS, we could use it. There are more fundamental questions about how we use the money. What are we doing with it? And I think at the outset, perhaps the NHS was set up as a national illness service, and we need to move much more to prevention. But as John has said, that is a challenge. It's not easy, but more can be done. I think most significantly, in terms of the challenge, we have to realise that it's not just a challenge for health. It's a challenge for health, education, the environment, transport. So, for example, if I look at Derry as an example, because I live there, and look at the changes in the environment and the natural environment, the walkways, the cycle paths, it has fundamentally changed how people behave, because there is an environment there that encourages people to change their behaviours. So I think it's not just about health. It's about a programme for government that looks across all of those departments and says, how can we encourage healthier lifestyles, and also how can we empower people to look after their own health.
Okay, let's talk to Gretty Horgan, who's on the line from the world of social policy. Good morning to you, Gretty.
Good morning.
Is the key thing here also to look at the structure of the NHS and what happens within it? And is it a bit unfair to say, well, look, we just all have to pay more because it's 70 years down the line, it's just not fit for what it was originally designed for?
Well, I think that actually we probably need to look at the whole structure of society, because one of the things that's happened in the 70 years since the NHS was set up is that society has become a lot more unequal. And as the sort of gap between the haves and the have-nots has grown, so has the health gap. And so the poorer you are, the much more ill you're likely to be. Whether or not you have the kind of lifestyle issues, you know, that people talk about as being why, you know, why poor people get blamed for being ill. So, you know, things like respiratory diseases, for example, in the most deprived areas are much higher. Whether or not people smoke, you know, it's not because, not only because people smoke. So I think that we need to look broader at society, like Deirdre was saying. But certainly the way that the NHS, you know, has developed, the extent to which, for example, it relies on, you know, things like agency and bank nurses rather than, or particularly agency nurses and doctors, you know, rather than actually, you know, people on pensionable contracts, permanent and pensionable contracts, is actually very, very expensive. So there are things that can be done within the health service to reduce the cost while improving the service, you know, as opposed to reducing the costs and disimproving the service. And certainly we definitely need to be looking at things like that. And some of the things that Deirdre was talking about actually, you know, helping to prevent chronic illness. And that really does mean...
What do we do now, though, Goretti? With waiting lists, they're continually growing. We have this latest crisis within the Belfast Trust. You know, what do we do to try and tackle this now? Because I understand... educating people and making sure people are completely aware of what they can do to help themselves is important, but it's maybe not something that will help in the near future.
Well, I mean, there's things that go on in society that we forget about sometimes, I think, that actually means that people get sicker. So, for example, doctors are saying that at the moment, because of benefit cuts, that they're seeing children who are in the UK who are malnourished. Now, if a child starts its life malnourished, it's going to end up, you know, being a sick adult. So we can't separate out these things. I mean, yes, of course, you know, the NHS can be, you know, changed to be more fit for purpose for the years, for 70 years after it was set up. But we have to actually look also as why is it that it's not just because of an ageing population that our ill health is growing. It's also because of the growing gap between, you know, the growing gap, inequality gap in society, particularly the gap between the rich and the poor. And you know, we can see this, okay. We can map it, you know, decade on decade.
All right, let's take some calls on this. Brian in Andersonstown, good morning to you.
Good morning, Vinay.
Would you be, for example, prepared to pay more to try and improve the health service as it is?
Oh, yeah, I'll answer that, yes, Vinay, because what I was really going to say was that I'm a pensioner. I've fed into the system before I retired. I'm working part-time and I'm still paying into this system. But as a pensioner, it'll be, we're all getting, well, maybe say thank God, we're all living longer. But maybe it's controversial, but what about the pensioners maybe getting a subscription from their pension? As in, what would a pound from each pensioner make the National Health Service? You know, I would anyway.
Do you think, can everyone afford that? Because you know there'll be people saying, well, fair enough, Brian, if you can afford even a couple of quid from your pension, pensioners generally don't make a lot of money. There's not a high income, and therefore why are you targeting the people that have the low income and maybe not looking at those that are making a fortune?
Well, I mean, maybe 20 years ago, I wouldn't even thought of it. But as I said, when I mentioned on the talk there, that we are living longer. So society as a whole would have to turn around and say we're going to have to help ourselves as well as looking after the health. And it's probably controversial me saying this here, but I mean, the pensioners are going to outstretch the people before their retirement, you know, as living longer and so forth, you know.
Okay. You know? Let's take another call on this. George in East Belfast. George, good morning.
Good morning, Vinny.
What do you think?
Well, I'm a pensioner also. And I'm living in a nursing home. And I believe that we should afford a wee bit more.
You'd be happy to pay a bit more in?
Oh, yes, definitely.
And what's your experience of the health service been? I don't need specifics, but have you had any issues in terms of waiting lists?
No, not at all. Any time I was taken to the hospital, I was seen right away.
So it's worked well for you. And can I ask, do you have any bad habits? Do you drink? Do you smoke?
No, I don't drink or smoke.
And what about those that do? Do you think they should be penalised? Well, I know they are to an extent already with taxes that they pay, but if you go to the NHS with a problem that's related to something you've done yourself, should you pay more?
Drinkers should be penalised, the ones who binge.
Okay, George, thank you. We'll take one more on this for now. Brian and Glen Gormley. Good morning, Brian.
Hello, Benny. I think actually we all take the National Health Service in this country for granted. I believe that I would go a step further than Brian there. I actually believe that we should all pay more, except for the very lowest paid, which would obviously have to be worked out what that level is. But I would include in that pensioners, people on benefits, DLA, etc. Remember that you can get up to 26,000. That's around about that figure, as far as I know, which includes housing benefit, which is the equivalent to earning about over £500 in wages. What I would do is I would start at 1% at the bottom and increase to 5% as you go up the wages scale. I really can't see any other alternative except to do this, because we are all getting older. We should appreciate that. And if you leave this country and you see, that's what brings people to this country, partly. It's something we've took for granted for far too long.
Okay. Thanks, Brian. If we did agree to pay more for our healthcare, in what form could this money actually be raised? And again, would you be willing to pay 03030 80 55 55? Esmond Burney is chief economist with the PwC. So what form could that take, Esmond?
Thank you very much. Good morning, Vinny. First of all, I should say you've described my previous job. I'm now senior economist with Ulster University.
Apologies for that, Esmond.
No problem. Okay, so yes, this is a very important issue, and I'm glad the programme's looking at it. The basic problem is we're spending public money, huge amount on healthcare. Of course, very good reasons for that. And that amount of money has gone up dramatically over the 70 years since the National Health Service came into existence in 1948. But we still find year after year the demand is always racing ahead of the money that is available. And your callers have been talking about personal cases.
Talk facts and strategies. Though, where would this money actually, or could it come from?
Yes. Where could it come from? Well, I think there are three broad approaches. First of all, you try and make the existing resources in the NHS and hospitals and so forth more efficient. But that's been tried. It's slow, and there are probably limits to that. Secondly, and you were hinting at this in some of your earlier points, you could try and reduce the growth in demand for healthcare. That brings in issues like more preventative, being more healthy, nudging more responsible behaviour. But then, yes, into this area of raising funds, and I think there are really three choices here. We can raise taxes, and perhaps that could be in the form of a dedicated health tax, so people would at least know how much of their income tax was actually going into the health service. So there's tax. You could have, as Germany, France and a number of continental European countries have, a system of social insurance. That is, it would be compulsory for everyone to take out health insurance, but there would be a sort of safety net or state support for people who are unemployed and lower incomes. Thirdly, of course, there is the option of what we have on the other side of the Atlantic, the United States private insurance model. Of course, under Obamacare and whatever may follow it, it's in a bit of flux at the moment. So it really comes down to three options. We pay more income tax, we have compulsory social insurance, or people, to a greater extent than at the moment, take out their own private insurance arrangements.
There are three options there. So as you listen this morning, would you be willing, if this meant you had a shorter waiting time, you had, when you go to A&E, you didn't have to wait for as long. If you're on a waiting list for an operation, it was much shorter. Or do you think, do you know what, once again, I pay my taxes, I pay my national insurance, and they need to sort this another way other than hitting me in the pocket? 030 30 80 55 55. Deirdre Heenan, taxes, social insurance, private insurance, any of them tickle your fancy?
Well, I have to say, I suppose taxes may be an issue, but the rest of it I don't really find appealing, because I think what we don't want is a two-tier system, those who have and those who haven't, and a private system for those who are willing to pay for it. Part of the attraction and the success of the NHS was it's free at the point of delivery. It doesn't matter. No one's going to ask you in your hospital bed how much money you have or to see your bank card. And I do think that is a principle that we should and want to hold on to. So to go back to the earlier point, I think this is really about focusing the resources that we have more carefully, more long-term strategic thinking. So a big issue in Northern Ireland, as we would say, new politicians come in, we have yet another health review. We need to agree on at least a 10-year plan for health in Northern Ireland. What is that going to look like? And when I say health, it's not just A&E and the NHS. It's, for example, mental health. One in four people in Northern Ireland have mental illness. Yet, for example, we don't really teach mental education in primary schools, in post-primary schools. We could be teaching about self-regulation. We could be addressing the issues of stress and anxiety. On the national curriculum, we have physical education, but we don't have mental well-being. So I think we really need to look at a much more joined-up approach around health, social care and well-being.
John, is our head in the sand to an extent? Are we hoping that this will get better? Two-thirds of acute hospital beds are currently occupied by people over the age of 65.
I think one of the difficulties about the health service is that many people don't use the health service because they're fit, well and healthy. And therefore, it's not on their agenda. It's not the sort of thing they think about on a day and daily basis. Everybody thinks about it whenever you start to use it, or someone in your family starts to use it, and you have a personal experience. Now, there are two things that I think are really important. It is the fact that we do need to reform our healthcare system, and we do need to get it as efficient as we can do. And in Northern Ireland, we seem resistant to that as a population. You know, if you try to change something in some area, you will get protest, you will get court action, you will get all of those things. But in the end, I think the question is this making the health outcomes, and it is about outcomes, better for people who live in Northern Ireland rather than the immediate locality I live in? Because when people make a change in a small area, they don't do it to make things worse, they do it to make things better. And I think the second issue is, and I'm attracted personally to the idea of having the separate tax which explains what you have in health, because I think then you can have a contract with the public. The public know what they're paying for the system. You can have a debate about that. Fairly done, of course. I'm not talking about it in an unfair way. Fairly done, and it can be done.
Yeah, but you know, when people hear the word tax, they'll not think there's anything fair about that.
Well, they may or they may not think that it's fair in that regard. But the point is that we're all currently paying tax for that system. So
exactly.
It's about dedicating that tax and explaining what it is to people. When you say, I pay my income tax, and out of the income tax comes some money for health. Actually, my personal view is that you should have the line that says the proportion that you pay in your income tax for health is. Because then when the health system comes and says we need 1% more, or some variant of that, then there is a proper debate about why you need the 1%. People are always suspicious about tax when they see it as some big bucket of money.
And let's be totally honest, John, when it comes to trying to bring in things like that, there is a lot of resistance for example, prescription charges, even in social care, which is, unlike health, isn't free. You know, nursing homes, for example, attempts to raise money have been scuppered many times. You've got Labour's death tax, May's dementia tax. Are they things you think, well, look, we simply need them to be able to cope?
What I think we need is a proper, honest debate in the society in which we live about all of those things. You know, when they come in with some sort of, the trumpeted headline and all of that, it tends to immediately polarise people, and they're either yes or they're no.
Because a lot of people don't have the extra cash. So let me just try and return to one of them in particular within that. So for example, dementia tax, which did damage the Tories to an extent. Is that something you think we should look at again?
I think there's no doubt we're going to have to look at how we pay for social care with older people. We currently have a system where people do pay in nursing nursing homes if their income is such at a certain level. They certainly lose their benefits when they go into nursing homes as a contribution towards that. So I think there's going to be a debate about it. But the issue here is to have the debate in an honest and open way, not to sort of, you know, particularise it in some way and create fear. I think a lot of what happens in the current debate is there's fear and people think, well, I'll never be able to pay for that, and therefore some people will get and some people won't. I think it's an honest debate that
I want to bring Deirdre Heenan back in there. Are they, the death tax, the dementia tax, are they anything you think would be ever, you know, viable or that we should have here? And bearing in mind the average cost of treating someone between the age of 55 and 59 is just under $2,000 per head, and that goes to 6,000 when you jump up to the 75 to 79 year old, and then that moves to 14,000 for the 85 and over. So there is an issue there we need to really concentrate on when it comes to the older people in the population.
Well, I think there is an issue. When we talk about dementia tax or death tax, of course it's not appealing and not attractive. It's there to attract negative headlines. But the reality is we do need a discussion around social care. We have an integrated health and social care system in Northern Ireland, but social care has always been the poor relation. So the people who are working in social care tend to be undervalued. The system is underfunded. But the reality is, if you look across our hospitals in Northern Ireland today, if you stay a week in a hospital, it's approximately £2,000, approximately. If you're in a nursing home, approximately £500. If you're at home, approximately £150. But we don't have the domiciliary care packages to get people out of hospital at home. And of course, fundamentally, people want to be cared for at home. So I think we need a radical shift where we're focusing our resources to allow people to have the care that they want when they want it, and that's at home. So yes, part of that discussion is about how we fund it, but it's also about stopping people ending up at A&E in the first place.
Okay.
Remembering that 80% of people who turn up at A&E leave with no prescription and no additional care because they are not going to the right point in the healthcare system. So we need a system that directs people to the appropriate care at the appropriate time, and that way we can ensure we are using our resources efficiently and effectively.
Joe in Belfast, another caller on this. Good morning, Joe.
Hi, Vinny. Vinny, you know, I can't believe what I'm hearing here. Is everyone in a coma this morning? Has everyone got their head in the sand? Or are everybody just sheeples, just following the pack? I mean, Facebook in 2014 paid just under £4,000 £4,000 in corporation tax.
Well, I'm not sure what the figure is for that. I'm not sure myself what the figure is for that.
Well, I know it is.
You're saying four grand.
You can look it up to me. The government has billions of pounds for war at the drop of a hat, and we're talking about, oh, where are we going to find the money from? How are we going to do this? Are the working class going to pay more, screw them more into the ground? You know, this is what gets me about it. Why is nobody talking about the top 1% and the corporations who siphon away or avoid, whatever way you want to call it, paying tax every year in billions?
Well, let me tell you this, Joe, the cost of maintaining the current system is rising at 5.5% per annum, and this means that the current budget of $5 billion will double over the next 12 years.
Billy, do you know the amount of money that the top 1% and the corporations...
I'm not doubting that. I'm just trying to say this is not something that, from what we can look at with these figures, is going to get better. Right. You know, at that point, right, the health will cost every penny we currently get.
Why is it always the poor, the working class and the middle class that have to shoulder the burden? Why does nobody ever talk about the top 1% and the corporations?
Okay,
Joe. Why does nobody talk about it?
Well, what do you think? Just briefly, what should be done?
Exactly what I'm saying, Sonny. If the government would do correctly what it's supposed to do and get these people to pay the correct tax, the government would be in the black. This is the point I'm trying to make.
Okay.
There would be money for everything, Sonny. There's money at the drop of a hat for wars, and 140 missiles were dropped on Syria there recently in that farce of an attack that the UK took part in. And each of those missiles costs £1 million. A time. Let's get real here and talk about what's really going on in society.
All right, Joe, thank you. I think there'll be many that will agree with you. 0-30-30-80-55-55. John Compton, we've seen the resignation this morning of the Director General of the Republic of Ireland's Health Service executive, Tony O'Brien, had been under pressure to resign due to controversy over Ireland's cervical smear services. And of course, then emerged that at least 208 women diagnosed with cancer should have received earlier intervention. Do you think there should be, should people basically lose their jobs here over the current situation that we're in?
I think it's always easy to rush. Well, first of all, I don't know the details and the information about the Dublin changes, really, and it's, I think, not really very appropriate to make comment on that unless you have that knowledge and the scale of knowledge, because it's a very complicated thing. Over here, what happens is people do rush to, oh, let's sack somebody, let's do this, let's do that. Actually, in my experience, what I've found is that these things are always very complicated. There are systems, there are processes, and actually it's about fixing the systems and processes. That's what makes things better.
Okay. Well, given that the Irish Health Minister, Simon Harris, said that at the beginning of May there was as many as 1,500 cervical cancer tests that had yet to be independently audited, mm-hmm. and then considering there has been a patient recall in Northern Ireland of just over 2,500 people with neurological conditions, should there be a similar resignation here in that particular case?
I don't think it's the right question, to be quite honest, Vinny. I mean, there's an announcement of an inquiry about the neurology thing here. I think when you say something and you set a process in place, you let the process work out and the process tells you where you go to. I think doing anything else is just premature, and it feeds that sort of frenzy, I think, which is not helpful to anyone, to be honest.
Yeah, but
and
so,
particularly
so
not helpful to the 2,500
yeah,
people.
Exactly, who are being recalled.
Who have to wait.
I'm sure they might disagree with you and say, someone should be punished for what is happening.
Well, and maybe that is the case, but you can't say that today.
Same question to you, Deirdre.
Well, I think the issue here is governance and the governance of the healthcare system. And what people need to have is confidence in the governance system. So are decisions made in a transparent way? Is it evidence-based? Is there accountability? So, for example, if something goes wrong, who exactly is going to be held accountable and where does accountability lie? And I think that is part of the problem in the healthcare system here. It's so complicated that people don't actually know who is responsible for what. So, for example, when we hear of growing waiting lists, why is this happening? How can we change the system?
Should heads roll, Deirdre Heenan?
Well, no, I don't think that's... I think the bigger question here is when there are difficulties in a huge system like a healthcare system, people revert to corporatism. So it's whatever you do, say nothing. And that then upsets the public further. What people need here is information. We are told that the NHS is patient-centred. It's all about people there to deliver for the patient. But when something like this happens, I think the most disturbing thing is that individuals themselves are not kept fully informed. They are not sure. There are huge levels of fear and anxiety. And people who should be out reassuring the public, saying, yes, there is an issue, but we will learn from it because we are all human.
Okay.
Error can be made, but the key thing is that we have systems in place to allow us to learn from that error.
Okay, Professor Deirdre Heenan, thank you very much. And John Compton and Goretti Horgan, thank you as well.